can go anywhere.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, if you want to solve some world problems.
I've been working on that. Not much progress, but working on it.
We want to talk about our favorite ice cream. We can do that too. By the way,
so
it's green mint chip. It's green mint chip, by the way. That's the answer.
Oh, that's not a bad choice.
Welcome to the News Nirvana Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. The News Nirvana Podcast features conversations with media professionals from across the country, highlighting our ever-evolving business models and showcasing the strong and effective journalism produced each and every day. This podcast is made possible to you by the generosity of Town News. Town News delivers solutions, services, and guidance empowering local media organizations to thrive in an ever-changing digital world. Contact Town News today to learn more how they can help you thrive. Connect with them at townnews.com.
Eric Reinert, welcome to the News Nirvana Podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, I am glad to have you. You are my third recording as we start this venture here. I'm going to call it an adventure. This is fun for me to get to talk to people all over the country that are in the news business. What are we doing? You know, how have things changed? And what are we doing going forward? I think we've always said it's an interesting time in the business, right? It seems to be always in evolution, but I think this is a little bit different time, right? As technology is, as at least in our industry, technology has grown so much in the last 25 years that we have to change how we collect the news and deliver the news.
Yeah. And I'll say that the things have changed in the last 14 months. We went from if you're looking at the levels, a change of 10, we went to an 11 in no time with a click, not a gradual fade. Everything had to change.
Anytime we can do a Spinal Tap reference on this show, I am for it. So, no, I think you're right too. Just the last year and a half, even if you just talk about how we went from, we had to pretty much cover everything from a remote standpoint,
mm-hmm.
right? So, yes. I mean, there wasn't a lot of content that we were in person to collect.
No, there wasn't. Although the void, at least on the digital side of things, was filled with a lot of health department live news conferences.
Yes,
that filled some of it. But yes, the rest of scheduling interviews and reporters and photographers not traveling in the same car together and the stories that I've heard from our news department now that we're getting back together again about how they pulled this off, unbelievable.
Well, and you're on the TV side of things. I should introduce you better. You are director of digital media. What's your station again?
We're WFMZ in Allentown, Pennsylvania. We're situated, if you look at think of a map, we're in between Philadelphia, New York City, the Wilkes-Barre-Scranton market, and the Harrisburg market.
Okay.
Right along the Delaware River there, where Washington is famous for.
I was going to say, you know, you being in TV, it's been interesting to watch how many anchors and reporters where their living rooms or basements became the studio, right?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
We always make the jokes about TV, the TV people, we're inviting them into our homes. Well, all of a sudden that got flipped during the pandemic and we were invited to their homes.
It really is. And we had a company get together last week, just have everybody come in, the food truck came in, that kind of thing. And it was fascinating to talk to some of these reporters and hear about how they had to pivot and change their lifestyle kind of to fit the job this time. And I remember seeing one of the reporters and somebody said, hey, she was the first one to have a live view fixed at her house. Now, for those of you who don't know, a live view is a device that uses cellular technology to get live shots, live remotes back to the station. And it's a backpack kind of unit, but to have a reporter just, you know, plunk one at your house and here you go, because you're going to be live all the time. That's quite the change.
And it was a change that was made really quickly.
Yes,
I mean, we all gathered whatever equipment we could, right? And just mm-hmm. moved it into our homes. And the technology that developed and changed, I mean, we're using a web-based studio system right now mm-hmm. that was barely a fledgling company when the pandemic started, and now it's huge.
Yes, it is.
Or even, what did everybody use? Zoom, right, at first, and that was a thing that it was a small company, and then just exploded.
And then Zoom became a verb too. We're going to Zoom today. It's like when Google started. Now you Google things. Now you Zoom things. It's it was a challenge to get used to the different technologies because, you know, when our reporters would interview people at home, they're either using Zoom, they're using GoToMeeting, they're using StreamYard, they're using Hangouts, they're using all these different types of technologies that, you know, we have to bring together here and somehow turn that into a reasonable looking broadcast signal to put on the air for everybody. Big challenge.
Yeah. And I think we got, we became a lot more liberal in our what we would accept as far as video and audio quality. Right. I mean, I remember when I moved the studio. So I host and produce a lot of these podcasts and digital type things. And I moved my studio home. And I live in a 115-year-old house, and you know, audio is not great with plaster walls. But I think we all learned to just accept it that that's what it was. Or even now, I'm sitting with a in front of a webcam that's right in front of me.
That's a great point because you know our engineering staff down in the engineering department are shaking their heads like, why am I bothering to put 4K on the air when they're streaming this stuff that freezes and has blocks all over it? Like right. We've just expanded it. Yeah. 4K is great. And yeah, that streaming thing, that's okay too.
What did, was that a topic of conversation as you got going about quality and as far as what you did, or was it just, let's get the story and put up what we've got?
It was, if you could get it back, let's get it back. I came up here once, just a couple weeks into when the pandemic started, and I was surprised, I shouldn't have been, by driving into the parking lot here at the office and seeing the photographers sitting in their news cars editing the stories for that night's newscast. So they would sit out in the parking lot, edit them, and then they, from the parking lot, use FTP to get it back into the station a few steps up there because we were trying to keep everybody out of the station that didn't need to be there so the on-air talent didn't get sick, so the directors who have to push the buttons don't get sick, try and keep everybody out. And to that end, I think they put out some Wi-Fi antennas out in the parking lot and did stuff like that. So we can do our job out there instead of where this facility we built for that.
Right.
Crazy.
Yeah, that's not, I mean, it's almost the same thing that like school districts across the country did, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there was one, I am in the Kansas City metro area, and I know of one school district that installed Wi-Fi systems in their buses and would park their school buses around the district so that students and families could get Wi-Fi access if they didn't have it at their houses.
But see, that's where smart people thrive. When you think about that, how can not necessarily, well, not what it costs at that point, but how can you make this work better for the people that we have to serve? I was astounded to find out that our evening newscast was being produced by someone who was sitting two counties away in their living room. And I said, how do they produce a newscast? Well, we put a home security camera, mounted it in our control room so it could see all the monitors, and they sit at home with their laptop and they can see all the monitors as if they were sitting there.
So and they've got a shot of multi-monitors.
Yes, they do. And then, we put our intercom on the phone so they can sit there and they can talk to the reporters and everything else in the field. I never imagined that. None of us ever thought we'd be doing this way. And it's changed us immensely. Immensely.
What do you think? I mean, so what changes are you seeing? I mean, how are I guess your staff and your reporters, how are they operating differently because of what they learned and they were able to cobble together?
We learned to the technical staff in the newsroom learned to, I think, communicate better because they had to. If there was a photog who shot some video, they have to somehow get a low res copy of that to the reporter who might not be on site. So the reporter can get sound bites and copy down the times for the edits, things like that. So then the photog could go edit that. And then he's got to get that high res version into our system. And somebody here who's on the production end has to know it's there. So you go beyond just the simple phone calls. Hey, I just sent this in or something like that. You have to come up with a more comprehensive system for chatting. We used Microsoft Teams. I mean, there's other things out there, but we had to build all those little portals so that everybody could communicate and everybody would quickly understand how to do that. One of the interesting things is that our sales department in once they got used to the technology, they've been thriving on being able to do all of, a lot of their business remotely. And in talking to one of the salespeople last week, I was surprised to hear her say, "I'm not coming back to the office. This is amazing. I don't have to sit in a long commute. I don't have to sit in traffic to go find a client. I don't have to go and wait in a client's office and things like that. I don't have to take along an iPad or something like that to show them what I'm talking about for a digital advertising buy." She said, "I can get them on a conference call online. I can click a button, share my screen. Oh, you want to see this video? Click here. You want to see what the website looks like? Click." And they're able to do a lot of business that way because, well, their clients quickly became, you know, used to doing their business that way as well. So it's very surprising to see that. I think that a majority of our salespeople will probably continue to work from home. I'm imagining that we'll have a, you know, the team meeting once a month or whatever, where everybody still gets together, because you still miss the human element of that.
Right.
But the ability to do all that remotely jumped right in.
Yeah, I wonder what the balance is going to be like. I mean, we tend to always overcorrect, right?
Yes.
swing from one to the other. I mean, but do you think that it? Do you really think that there's going to be a lot more of that kind of? I mean, from your sales staff angle, of that remote meeting with their clientele and with their new prospects?
I do think so. Being in the market that we're in, you know, our clientele is varied. You know, we did have, you know, salespeople going into Manhattan and New York to the ad agencies there. We have the smaller mom and pop businesses, the one-offs, the local franchises, things like that. So it's going to be varied. For the ad agencies, things like that, yeah, it's going to be online. You know, part of it was before, but now it really is. For the smaller shops, I think it's still going to be maybe some in-person calls, some things like that, you know, until they get ramped up with the technology, if they need to.
Right.
They might not need to, and we have to adapt to that too.
Although I found some of the smaller businesses adapted quicker. Like they went and for me where I am, like they went and got that technology to survive. And I don't know if it's just size, they were able to pivot faster because you don't have to pivot 100 people.
In a smaller business, you don't have to work with your IT folks in security.
Well, that's true. that's true.
You know, that's a big thing.
As a small business, I understand. Look, I am IT. I am security. I am, right?
It was a challenge for us in the digital and the online department because, you know, we're used to being here on site and everything's internal and we have access to everything. And once we get home, we started to work with that, realize what we couldn't access. And then the IT folks said, "Whoa, we can't let you just jump in like that anymore, because that we can't open that up for you, because then everybody will get in." And there were a lot of struggles involved in that, especially at the point when, you know, not to get too detail oriented, but to do live streams, like I mentioned, of all these health department news conferences and things like that. Well, you have a photographer standing at a podium and the news conference isn't quite ready yet, and I'm sitting at my house. How do I know when to push go and start streaming when they're ready?
Right.
So, you know, we take the low-tech approach of taking a webcam in an office here at the station, pointing it at a monitor and sitting at home and watching that webcam at home so we can see it real time. All those little things became big problems until we could figure out the simplistic ways to do them.
I want to shift gears a little bit.
Sure.
Part of what you do, your job is you have helped the station develop a bunch of different mobile applications, and mm-hmm. you guys use those for various monetization paths. And I do want to talk about what all those are and why you did many, but kind of following the theme of how things have changed, mm-hmm. was your ability to use those effectively altered or hindered by all of the pivots you had to make just to keep broadcasting news?
Well, I will say that three of the four apps that we have did well, and here's why. The four apps that we have one that's news content, very little weather, no traffic information, things like that, because we have a traffic app, which is maps, incidents, traffic flow charts, things like that. We have a weather app that includes the radar and all the hour-by-hour stuff. And we have what we call a live app, which is kind of like an OTT on your phone. You can watch the newscast live, or when we're not airing a live broadcast, it will repeat the most recent one. So it's all news all the time. So can you tell me which of those apps did not do well? Traffic.
Nobody's driving.
Yep. Yep. That one sank a little bit, but it's coming back. It's coming back now. And you asked about the reason for those apps. You know, as a consumer, I'd probably like to have, you know, all the information in one app. But as a business person, it turns out we can monetize them better when they're separate. So for the news app, we'll sell, you know, run of site type of advertising on that. You could sponsor a section of the news app if you want, something like that. The weather app, we've limited to 4 advertisers, only 4. And that gives us an advantage to go out to a client and say, you're only 1 of 4 in there. So there's a good chance somebody's going to see your ad every time they look at the weather map. The traffic app, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead and finish the traffic part.
I said the traffic app is an annual sold to one client. It's a large towing company in the area, and they keep renewing every year. And the live app uses a lot of programmatic and things like that. So we try to cover all the bases with that by making those apps separate. And it didn't get a whole lot of pushback on it because people can pick and choose the app they want.
Yeah, what I wondered how long have you been doing those apps? When did you launch those for?
Nick, that's a great question.
Are they relatively new?
Oh, no. We've had them for 3, 4, or 5 years, something like that.
Well, and I ask because I think over the last 5-ish years, the discussions of what apps to build and to push out, I think it's gotten harder as you know, app fatigue has happened, and you know, people are happy with, I've got the things I want here, right here. Do I really want to download more? Do I want to add more? Or as you said, as a user, a lot of people want it in all in one place. Did you have trouble marketing that to people for usage, or did you really spend a lot of time like, we're going to break these down so that we can better target our ad sales, but how do we make sure it hits the usage numbers that we want to hit to be effective?
What it comes down to is the quality of the information that you provide on those apps and the individuality of each of those apps. If you want, you know, local news, you can download a CNN or a Fox app on your phone. You're not going to get your local news.
Right.
You download our app, you get it. And the same thing goes with the local traffic and the local weather from a local meteorologist, things like that. And to that end, that's what has made the success. You know, the local news app that we have doesn't put a big focus on national news, things like that. It's local because that's the reason people are going to download it and continue to use it. One of the best features that we had on our app, we currently don't have, we're going to get back at some point, was a distinctive push notification, a push alert tone on our news app. So that whenever we'd have a breaking news story or something we need to let people know, you'd have that distinctive ping on your phone that was not like anybody else's. And that proved to be highly successful. People get used to that. When they hear that ping, it's not just, oh, it's another weather alert, you know, something like that. They pull the phone out and they go, oh, something close by happened. What is it? The push notifications are a wonderful tool. We use them on 3 of those apps, the news, the weather, and the traffic app, because it's a reminder that somebody hears to pick that device up and look at it. So we keep trying to annoy people several times a day. Hey, look, we got something to tell you.
Yeah. Have you had good luck with people opting in for the push notifications?
We have. We actually
feel like that's a harder and harder sell.
It is. And it's, I'll tell you, it's a tough line to toe there as to how many alerts to push out. If it's, you know, we hesitate to call them breaking news because not everything we push out is breaking. And my general manager once said a great thing that we've tried to instill in our digital producers, which is you want your push alerts to try to help guide your audience through their day. That's a pretty cool thing. What does that mean? you know, if first thing in the morning, there's not a lot going on, but yet there's thunderstorms later in the day, send out a push alert that says, by the way, take an umbrella. You might need, you know, something might be happening later on today. Or, you know, I don't necessarily want to push out an alert for a jobs, you know, jobs report or something like
right.
that, or at something economic. But it's just the kind of thing, if a local music festival announces a new act that hasn't been in the area and we have nothing else going on, push it out. You know, tell people about that. Give them something more than the car accident or the fire or something like that. Broaden it out a little bit more.
I like that that driving statement of guide your people through their day. I think that's good because then you don't rely on breaking news, because not everything is breaking.
Yeah, and that's old. What does that mean anymore?
Right.
Everybody has a red bar across the bottom that says breaking news. What does that mean?
Well, and I think because of the way news consumers are now, and because of all the choices that news consumers have, right, to create their silos, mm-hmm. A breaking news could be anything. It just depends on what they're interested in.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, it could be breaking news from Court TV, if that's your thing, yes. right?
Or the, sure.
But sure. but that's not breaking news for everybody. And for what you're doing locally, I think what we all try to do, right, is serve that community or industry, whatever it is that we're covering. Mm-hmm. Not everything's breaking. But I love the idea of how are you going to guide your readers, your viewers through the day,
and we're going to be taking hopefully soon a step forward in that, and allowing users to opt into different types of alerts. You want a sports score alert, you want a news alert, but beyond the news alert, let's break it down geographically. You want the regional alerts, or do you want an alert for the eastern part of our coverage area, the western part, something like that. And it's interesting because some of the app producers that we have worked with before, when I mentioned about having the geofencing, or well, it's not geofencing, geotargeting for the breaking news alerts, they were under the impression that we want to take your GPS signal. If you're here, there's breaking news, you want to know about it. That's not at all what I want. I want users to select the breaking news they want, because they might work here, but they might live over here. So they might want to have breaking news for both places, not just where they happen to be at that time. It might not matter to them. So to that end, we're going to try to divide up our coverage area just a little bit, and allow users to select which push alerts they like. And then you'll get our online staff to kind of be a little judicious in how they choose who we're sending those to. So that guidance, as we said, is a little more specific to them. Again, it's one more reason why that makes our app valuable to be able to do that.
What data metrics are you looking at too, as far as not as creating kind of those zones for people to choose from, but then also as you're kind of figuring out what content to push out, what data and metrics are you using, or how much do you even rely on it?
I'm not using a whole lot of data for that. I have to say there's just intuition and knowing the market and understanding how people react to what we've done in the past. We generally have, where we are in eastern Pennsylvania, we realized when we started getting real heavy into news that we almost had two separate audiences: the Lehigh Valley, Allentown, Bethlehem, Easton, those areas. And then there's this unique place to 35 miles to the west called Reading, Pennsylvania. And it was far enough away that they looked for different types of news. They didn't care what happened in the Allentown area. And then we realized, hey, the people in the Allentown area over here by the Delaware River don't really care what happens in Reading. And when we started paying attention to that, we put a separate news bureau out in Reading, Pennsylvania. It's a little bit smaller, but it covers the area. We divided up our newscast. So every night at 5 o'clock, we have a Lehigh Valley newscast. At 5:30, we have a Reading and Berks County newscast. At 6 o'clock, we do a regional one that encompasses everything. Just that alone is enough to create two different audiences. And if there's people over here in the Lehigh Valley that never go west of here, sorry for them, because it's nice over there, they may choose just to get the alerts here. They don't care what happens over there. People over there, same thing. So it's just knowing your market and understanding what, you know, over the course of time, what people react to.
Old school news judgment.
Yeah, Yeah. The data is important, but sometimes you just got to think it through too.
Did you see audience growth kind of when you made those decisions? You said, hey, we're going to do, you know, we're going to do this region at 5:00. We're going to do this region at 5:30.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We got audience growth. We have audience loyalty and we have advertiser loyalty. Now you have advertisers that say, I only want to advertise over there because my bakery doesn't reach this far. I don't deliver flowers over there, that kind of thing. And it makes it a whole lot easier to do it that way from the broadcast side. Now, from the digital side, it becomes challenging because then when you have the baker over here who says, I want to geo-target my ads online, we really cringe at that because once you start doing that geo-targeting for digital advertising, we generally don't reach the audience that they're expecting to reach.
Right.
That makes sense. And it's just we try to shy the advertisers away from that kind of thing.
Well, and I think very seldom do people really know, geographically speaking, mm-hmm. where their audience is.
Mm-hmm.
I think people, when you do dig into data, audience data, which for every business is its own beast. But I think when you do dig in, I think a lot of people are shocked when they find out where all their audience is coming from.
Yes. Yes,
I think that's my thing. I kind of want to ask a little bit. I had a conversation with a previous guest for this show. We talked a lot about audience and viewership. Are you seeing more people go to your app to view the news rather than make an appointment and sit down at 5, sit down at 6?
Yes. Yes. There's a challenge.
Yeah. And I guess my question is about that challenge and what that challenge actually is for you as you guys are developing, you know, your news product.
It's everybody in the news business sees this happening as well. Your broadcast audience is getting older and older. The next audience you're bringing into the younger folk, things like that, they're all online. They're never going to put up an antenna at their house. They're never going to have a landline, whatever those things were. So it's a different audience that we have to try to reach. And that is a continuing challenge. If I can, I'll move this a little further here that, you know, everybody's tried to use social media to try to get a younger audience, younger demographic into their product. Boy, do we run into challenges with that too. And this goes into a broader challenge that when you try to use like social media, something like that to spread your news and your information, you're passing that off to a third party. And those third parties don't always deliver it. And as we know, you know, if a young person takes their phone and says, I get my news from Facebook or Twitter or one of these places, that as they scroll through, they're not seeing everything we post because that third party, that social media company, has an algorithm too that decides what you should see.
Yeah. And I'm going to go back to this, the same previous guest who is in the Northwest part of the country and a station manager. You know, his thing was he was talking about how they have decided for them it's more important for, and he says, we even refer to our anchors as influencers now, that they post the stuff. And he said it's a much different and more productive way to do it, because when you just post to your company page, to your station Facebook page or Instagram or whatever, it's not really branded anymore. It's not your thing. It's just Facebook news. But when it's the anchor or the reporter, then it's somebody that they know because they've seen them on TV, that there's that connection again that really does drive the traffic.
It is. And you know, what's your ROI on that? I mean, how do you get the people back to make a buck off of doing something like that? You know,
boy, that's the question we all have, right?
It really is. And you know, we don't allow our people here to post video directly to social media. You post a link, you have a great description, a great teaser, tagline, whatever, to get people back, but don't post the video because I don't make any money on that. You got to bring it back in house to make money on that. One of the biggest challenges here, I think, has been Instagram, to pick out one in particular. You know, Instagram is very influential, but Instagram becomes a challenge because it's very difficult to, first of all, to produce it because most of it on mobile, the good stuff on mobile.
Right.
And that's really hard to spread around the newsroom and keep control of? And then secondly, how do you bring that back in so you can, you know, we can adequately monetize something like that and cover the costs of the effort of doing that? Haven't figured that one out yet, but from my perspective, I'm not willing to jump on the bandwagon, so to speak, with everybody else who just says, oh, we got to post Instagram stories all day long. I don't see it. I really don't. And I'm hesitant to do it.
The News Nirvana podcast is brought to you by Town News, the creators of IQ Audience Plus. IQ Audience Plus replaces your old school, one-size-fits-all paywall with a smarter metering solution that targets visitors with custom offers, converting drive-bys into paying subscribers. Learn more at townnews.com/audience.
I think the balancing act is tough, right? Because we want to go where the people are. I
mean, yes.
And look, I'm going to say this. You and I have probably been in this business a long time.
Probably.
And I always make the, it's not really a joke. I like to say it's a joke because it makes me feel better. But I always like the joke that, you know, nobody fought the internet harder than the news business, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when the internet was a thing, and it was, we all sat around the table, do we give our news away for free? What, you know, all those discussions about how to build our first websites, how and what to push out, because we still wanted people to buy the newspaper. We still wanted them to sit down on their couch at 5, 6, and 10. Mm-hmm. But we lost that fight.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
We lost badly.
Yes.
And I think a lot of the things that we're struggling with now are because of that.
There was a shift, as you know, from the, I'm not going to put it out there on social media, or I'm not going to put that out there in the digital domain because I'm taking away from my broadcast audience. They'll see it there. They'll want to sit down and watch the news. And it took us way too long to realize it's a different audience. They're not coming back to the newscast anyway, no matter what you try.
Right. So how do we attempt to find that balance that we've got to go where they are, but because of where you sit, I mean, your job is to drive monetization. How do we still bring them back to our apps, our website, our TV station, one of those three, right? Mm-hmm. So that you can sell the ads.
Well, I'll tell you this much. I'm not bringing them back to TV. I gave up on that. I could go ask, you know, my kids, anybody's kids, like, you know, hey, what would it take to get you to watch the 4 o'clock newscast? Like, what's that? I mean, they're not going to do it. So there's an online place for them. It's going to be an app. It's going to be a website. It's going to be something like that. But you're right. It's a challenge. How much do you give away on the other platforms to get people back in? And that's the biggest thing I've had. I wouldn't say challenges, but I've had some moments of enlightenment with our talent and our reporters and things when they push back and say, I want to post all this stuff on my page. And I come to them, I say, you realize we don't get anything out of that when you do that. You're giving it all away. You know, if you just give them all the information, what do you want a job in a year? You know, we got to make some money on this. So it's been enlightening for some of them, I think, to understand the business side of it. Yes, you're journalists. Yes, you want the information out there. Yes, social media is fun. But you have to understand the business side of it, too. And you're right. It's a balance and it's a tough one. And I don't have the answer yet. Still working on it.
Yeah, is that a constant topic and constant thought as you have your meetings and as you develop all the different things? I mean, are you always thinking we've got to go get people and drive them back? But man, I don't want to give it all away.
I don't. It's yes. The challenge is, we're almost chasing that, almost following it as it happens rather than leading it at this point. At least from where we are. Leading it becomes a challenge because that landscape continues to change. I never wanted to deal with TikTok from a business perspective, yet I have to. You know, it's things like that. Like, why do I have to deal with this? But yet I do. There's one I don't have a good answer on yet. Stay tuned.
I'm gonna be totally honest here. I don't get TikTok. I've tried. I don't get it. It seems like too much work.
I hear you, but when a reporter comes to me and says, "What's our policy on TikTok?" I'm like, I get back to you tomorrow. You know,
I'm gonna go make one.
Yeah, what is that? So, yeah, that's a big challenge.
Well, I want to go back to that presence though on social media and what your talent, what your reporters and your anchors are doing there. One of the things I want to do with this podcast is I want to use it as a way for our industry to push back a little bit. I think especially over the last 4 to 6 years, the giant narrative of I can't trust the media has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think a lot of that, I heard this statement from a reporter on a different podcast about 5 years ago. And it stuck with me, where he said a lot of that is because people don't know their reporter in their town anymore, right? Because as small newspapers have closed, as small stations have closed or been consolidated, you don't know that guy or that lady covering City Hall or the reporter covering your local school district or even just out taking pictures of your kid's little league, right? And so when you don't know that local reporter, then you obviously aren't going to know the reporter covering your county, the reporter covering your state, or all the way up to the national news. And that makes it harder and harder. Well, social media gives us this wonderful way to connect again, to be a face. And I love, I'll go back to our conversation at the very beginning of this episode, where it was, we flipped the script and we were inviting audiences into our living rooms because that's where we were reporting from.
Yep. Yeah.
Are you doing, as you write these policies, you just talked about you're having to write policies, new policies all the time for how to use social media. Are you thinking about, though, that, hey, this is our opportunity to build those connections back? I mean, could this really be the way that we build that trust back?
I will say that, you know, I understand, you know, what you're saying and how that might impact other markets. I have to say, I don't know that we've been terribly impacted by that, just because of the unique nature we have of the market that we're in, that it's not downtown Philadelphia. It's not New York City. And it's not, you know, a really rural area, something like that. We're kind of in the middle there. And our talent that we have, a lot of them are local people. Interesting story that we just hired a meteorologist who followed meteorology as a career, because years ago, one of our meteorologists did his all of these school visits and everything, came to her school and talked about meteorology. She got interested, grew up, went to school, worked on the station, decided she wanted to come back where her family is and work here again. You can't buy that kind of trust. That's great. You have a hometown person who's gone and got the education, come back, and now I know this area and I know how to forecast for this area. I know that if somebody says there's a storm coming, it's going to rain in Philadelphia. It's going to snow up in the Pocono Mountains. And here in the middle, we're getting the Pennsylvania mix. It's just a mess. And knows that, you know, rather than somebody who's, you know, come from another market completely or something like that. So it hasn't been a terrible challenge for us. We do, like a lot of other, you know, media companies do, put, you know, the outdoor advertising up with the faces on things like that. For many years, the faces of our anchors were on the top of the website. We used to call it the Mount Rushmore banner at the top. And we finally got rid of that, realizing that people actually do know, you know, who our reporters are. And I think we've done a fairly good job just by, like I said, trying to keep the talent local and not trying to be too high profile, and getting them involved in the community with community events and things like that. So I think we've done pretty well with that. Social media, I'm sure it's helped. We don't have a particular push, you know, for that connection. It's a great idea. And yeah, we probably should be doing more to solidify that. I think it's a great idea.
Well, and I think it's a great way too, just to show, so that when you're out doing those things in the community, like you can connect there that same way. You know, hey, I'm out raising money for, you know, our local social services agency, or I'm at the ball game announcing the national anthem, yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, but I think it's a great way to take those things that we've all done, right? I mean, that in our business, we've always had people go out and be a part of the community, but it's a way, I guess, to remind the community we're out there with them.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, and you can spread that more than just doing the post the the post promo in there that says, you know, we were at the ball game last night, you saw us there, something like that, where you could do it without cost across social media to all the people who are really interested in hearing that message too.
And a lot of that is used, this is where I'm going to try to tie it back. A lot of that is used, a lot of that social media is used with the go lives, right? So whether you, mm-hmm. you do a live stream, whether it's Facebook, whether it's Instagram, you know, Twitter has it as well, TikTok, LinkedIn, you can go live now. Mm-hmm. But how do you do that and still keep it driving traffic to your systems?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the most successful things we've done in social media has been to have our meteorologists do a Facebook Live generally every morning, but sometimes it happens in the evening or when there's severe weather, things like that. You know, as broadcasters, we give our meteorologists maybe three and a half minutes on the air to tell the whole story. And my apologies to any meteorologists who are listening. Meteorologists want to tell you the whole thing, why the clouds formed, how they formed yesterday, and 3 weeks ago, this is influencing it, where it's go, you know, and on and on. I get that. There's nothing wrong with that. There's people that want to hear that. But when you give them 3.5 minutes in a newscast, they're not going to get that across. So we started allowing them to do the Facebook Live and said, it's yours. Minimum of 10 minutes, go as long as you want. 10 minutes we found is about the point where you get enough people on to make it worthwhile to
right.
realize it's there. And we have done, you know, they go for 15, 20 minutes. Sometimes they're 45 minutes in. And they can go through every chart that they want. And they can answer all the questions that come in from viewers who are typing real time. And it is a wonderful, wonderful way to connect with people. I don't have any hard data. It's really hard to correlate that. But I'm convinced that those people who are watching those Facebook Lives are still watching the weather on our broadcast, or at least checking our app, you know, for weather regularly, because they understand, hey, these guys know what they're talking about. Look at the explanation they gave me for the snowstorm. So that's been very effective, because for that reason, you're connecting with people and you gave them an open-ended platform. Go as long as you want. It's great.
Well, and I think the beauty of those, though, too, the real power is what I have found is the replays, is the audience after you go live. I mean, you could get mm-hmm. a couple hundred people, whatever, maybe if you're lucky, right, and you've built the following, you're getting thousands of viewers when you do go live. But yeah. it's the numbers that increase afterward, because they start sharing when it hits that viral thing and people share it around, or they just go back.
Yeah. Because you're going to see it in your timeline. There it is. Oh, hey, I didn't see that. Let's watch it.
Or okay. I watched the 3 minute segment on the news.
Yeah.
But I want to know more.
Yep.
And I know that's where they're going to do it. Are you monetizing those at all? Are you selling some sponsors, putting sponsors on there, or is that strictly about the station and the talents brands?
No, we have there's sponsorship involved in that. It's. They tend to be long-term sponsorships, you know, whether we're selling for 3 months, 6 months out, something like that. And we're actually actively working on doing more of that. You have to work within the social media company's constraints of what they allow.
Right.
But certainly we'll go to that limit as best we can.
Walk right up to the line.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I say, oh, sorry. No, but we are monetizing them. Yes.
What else are you? What are you thinking? I guess as you look forward, what are you thinking as far as finding, you know, new ways to increase your ability to monetize, but also as you're developing new ways to drive traffic? What are some things you guys are thinking about?
Well, one of the things that's sadly on my mind and a lot of other digital people is the demise of third party cookie data. You know. Suddenly we become the source for all the information about our audience, you know, with first party data. And to gather that first party data, we've got to be a little more proactive. I mean, it's easy for the third party data. We just aggregate it, collect it all, you know, find where all the dots connect and go, that's our target right there. But for us to gather that on our own, especially for broadcast, it's going to be a bit more of a challenge. I would assume that for a print product, you are having people register online, become a member, subscribe, you know, go beyond the paywall, things like that. So you're already gathering that kind of data. For a broadcaster, we're not used to doing that. So I've been seeking creative ways to encourage people to sign up and become members on the site, whether it's because you're in a group of people that, you know, you get a survey that, you know, you can tell us how you feel about the station, things like that, or something like that. I really don't want to go to the point of creating a membership just for added value or added content. I personally don't think that many people are going to take the time to fill out that form, give up some information for what I have to offer, because I don't have something to offer that's that life changing that you need to fill that out. It could be, and it's going to have to be a little bit progressive too. You can't have somebody sign up for membership and ask them, you know, 15 questions, because after the third one, they're gone. Forget it.
Yeah. You need three good questions.
You need three good questions. I need your email address, and I'm going to need, you know, at a minimum, I need to know your location. Where do you watch the station? Where do you use the app? What location are you interested in? Those are the two that I want up front. Beyond that, I'd love to get, you know, age and things like that. But it's going to have to be some kind of progressive profiling where initially you get something for just giving up your email address or whatever. And then later on down the road, we've got to solve the technical problem, not a problem, but the technical challenge of saying, okay, we've seen this person visit the site X number of times over the last 6 months. Now we want to throw a question at him like, hey, it seems like you're interested in Berks County news. Do you want some more? Where are you? Give me your zip code and I'll give you more Berks County news, that kind of thing. So the progressive profiling is something that we have to look at how to do that without angering our audience or chasing them away. I think one of the benefits that we can give them is perhaps less advertising. So for the frequent flyers that come to a site all the time, you know, hey, you've been here often, sign in and we'll give you a couple fewer ads. You know, we won't give you those annoying pop-ups or whatever. And get them to do it that way. I don't think that's going to hurt our revenue as much as, you know, a salesperson might suggest. but it has to be something like that to give them some kind of an advantage to do that. A paywall? I don't think we could do that. I really don't.
I'm not sure if TV stations can get away with it. Only because they never did.
We never did, and we don't have the long form content that print does.
Right.
You know, the long form stuff, yeah, there's a lot of information in there. For us, it's rare that we have long form on our site or on digital products. So people aren't going to pay for that. One of the things I've thought about is some kind of a metered access. You've looked at 15 stories on our site this week. Just let us know who you are. You get free access. You could look at some more, that kind of thing. How successful is that going to be? How much are you going to chase your audience away? How much is your audience going to close their Google browser and open their Firefox browser and keep watching? You know,
right? I don't know. Right.
There's ways around it.
Well, there's always ways around it, and yeah. You know, I mean, if you look at what Apple's doing, right? They're making it harder and harder for cookies and everything else to track, yep. Which. Okay, users, great. Those of us that are still trying to monetize our businesses, I hate you.
Yeah. Well, try to convince a consumer. You know, the consumers, you know, you and I have both gone online and gone shopping for something like a pair of boots or something like that. And every other website, you know, you have that same ad come up again for weeks. And that's retargeting. And there's reasons for that. Now, when all that goes away, you're not going to get an ad for boots anymore. You're going to get an ad for diapers or something like that. I don't know. Maybe you need diapers in your family. I don't. I'd rather see an ad that maybe is annoying, but at least is geared towards something I'm interested in than something I don't need.
Right.
It's good for the advertiser, obviously. And I don't think consumers understand that in some way it's actually beneficial that they know a little bit more about you instead of trying to give you something you don't want.
And I don't know if this is just our insider perspective, but I always get a little annoyed when I see an ad and I'm like, that's nothing to do with me. What are you doing? Why do you think I need diapers? Right? There's a part of me that questions their algorithm.
Yes. Yes. Well, listen, Nick, don't tell anybody, but I've often been tempted to mess with the social media and visit sites I wouldn't normally do just to mess up with the algorithm.
Right. Just to see. One kind of last thing I do want to get to before we wrap up, and cause you just hit on it that because of what you do on the TV side, you don't have as much long form product.
Right.
I feel like even though the news business, and especially on the print side, spent about 20 years saying shorter, 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 people don't have attention spans. But I feel like there's a lot of news out there now that's proving that wrong. I think the very medium that you and I are doing right now, podcasting, proves that wrong, that people do want long-form journalism.
Yes.
If it's the topic that they want.
Yes.
They want it. Are you at your station? Is that something you guys think about adding? And maybe that's the extra content you were saying you didn't have to give. But is that something you think about as you plan for the future? That maybe there's some longer things, deeper dive things that we can go into.
Yes. Interesting that you mentioned that. A couple years ago, we realized that, you know, our local newspaper was writing long form articles and they were doing the recaps of the council meetings and the school board meetings and things like that. And we were focused more on the day to day, you know, 2.5 minute packages that we put on broadcast, things like that. Our news director came up with a brilliant idea, which is to hire some freelance writers to go to these meetings. We're not shooting video there. We're not doing a reporter stand-up outside the school board meeting, you know, and everything like that. They're going, they're maybe taking a photo, and they're writing up that board meeting, that council meeting, whatever, and submitting that in the evening. So that's ready to go first thing in the morning. And that does a couple things for us. First of all, that helps, you know, that's a small investment to cover some of these I don't want to call them smaller, but some of these events that are hyper local that not everybody in our audience is particularly interested in. If you're buying a newspaper has, you know, sections there and you find your section, you read it. Well, why can't we do that same thing on digital? We're not going to do it on broadcast. We don't have the time to do that. But in digital, we can do that. So we've found a couple of writers, and you know, unfortunately, they are former, you know, newspaper reporters too, who are looking for some extra work to go out to these meetings and do that. So in the morning, we have a section on our site and on our app called Inside Your Town, and it's going to be the local meetings that, you know, maybe 15% of our audience is deeply invested in, but they're going to go to that article, they're going to read it, they're going to share it, they're going to talk about it. Maybe we get another 15% with another board meeting that happened or something like that. The other thing that we've done is we have a local historian who also worked in print for many years. And once a week, he writes an article called History's Headlines. And it's a long form, very long form article about some historical event in the Valley when, you know, the day Kennedy came to visit, the day the steel plant closed down, whatever it is. And it's paragraphs long, and it's good. It's good information, but it's something that people in this area can relate to. Maybe, like you said, if you're interested, maybe not every topic, but once in a while, you're going to get that person. And we, the way we do this is we talk about it Friday night on our Friday evening broadcast, but we delve into it just a little bit. Here's what Frank's going to be talking about this week. A little bit. Read more on the website this weekend. And then we post that. So that's available for our digital people. And then Monday night on the broadcast, they run the whole thing.
But those today in history kind of things, or this week in history or whatever they are, right? That old community newspaper standard. I mean, They never, people love those and still love them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great thing for you to adopt and bring into your broadcast side of things. And yeah, people are going to flock to that.
Yeah,
and shared, you know, what great tidbits to use too in your social media pushes, like you know, here's just a couple of segments and a tease, here's the link, go check out the rest. And
yeah,
people are going to follow that all the time.
So it's interesting. So that in that respect, we're not pushing people from digital to broadcast. We're going the other way, broadcast to digital. you know.
Is that the future?
I don't think it is really.
It's
still going to be a delicate dance both ways. There's going to have to be synergies between the both of these, and it's going to depend on the topic, the timing. It's going to depend on a lot of that stuff, and I think it's going to go back and forth.
Do you have to build your packaging differently for that balancing act to work? I mean, are you packaging part of the story differently for your broadcast than you are for your digital push?
Generally, no. I would love to have the freedom to be able to do that, but to have a reporter go out and, you know, again, for now they're primarily doing their pieces for broadcast, and then we're moving them into the digital realm. There are times we do things that are specifically digital, but we're still not to that point yet where I think we put the focus on digital before the broadcast. Now that changes with, as they say, breaking news changes everything. So
right.
Breaking news is different. We'll do digital first. But for most of the packages and stuff like that, it's mostly broadcast first. There might be some extra stuff that's included on digital, extra photos, links, things like that. And that's the way to push people to the website. And don't just say, go to the website for more information. You tell them, go to the website. Here's a link for this. And you could sign up for that and see the pictures of what happened after the, you know, whatever. You have to have a specific reason for them to go, or they're not going to bother.
Right. Well, Eric, I appreciate you taking a little bit of your time today. This was fun. It was good to meet you and kind of dig in a little bit on how you are working things and the perspective of our changing landscape.
It is changing. Talk to me again in 3 weeks, and I'll have more information as it changes.
That's part of the fun, and I think that's part of why we all do what we do, right? We like that it changes.
Oh, I love it.
And we have to keep up with it.
Oh, I love it. It keeps me alive.
That's the fun.
Yes, it is. I appreciate the opportunity. Great questions.
Thank you. I appreciate the time. That will wrap us up for this episode of the News Nirvana Podcast. We will talk to everybody next time. The News Nirvana Podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or most any of your favorite podcast apps. The News Nirvana Podcast is made possible by the generosity of Town News. Connect with Town News at townnews.com. The News Nirvana Podcast is produced by Fredcasts. Think, speak, act.